Today's Tay Show will be on Case 64 in the Book of Serenity. Case 64 is entitled Zhi Zhao's Succession. Introduction. Yunmen personally saw Mu Zhao, but he offered incense for Zhuaifang. Fu Zhe received it personally from Wan Jiang, yet he succeeded to the Dharma of Dayang. On the branches of the coral trees, jade flowers bloom. In the forest of sandalwood, golden fruits ripen. But tell me, how do you create? Case. Head monk Zhi Zhao asked Feiyan, in opening a hall as a teacher, to whom do you succeed? Feiyan said, Dijong. Zhi Zhao said, you're very much turning your back on our late teacher, Zhang Jing. Feiyan said, I didn't understand one saying of Zhang Jing's. Zhi Zhao said, well, why don't you ask? Feiyan said, in the myriad forms, a single body is revealed. What is the meaning? Zhi Zhao raised his whisk. Feiyan said, this is learned at Zhang Jing's place. What about on your own part, head monk? Zhi Zhao had nothing to say. Feiyan said, how about in myriad forms a single body is revealed? Is this effacing the myriad forms or not effacing the myriad forms? Zhi Zhao said, not effacing. Feiyan said, two. The students all around them said, effacing. Feiyan said, in myriad forms, a single body is revealed. Transcending thought to see Buddha, breaking down an atom to produce a scripture, the family law presently becoming, who establishes a school? The moon follows the boat along the river's silken clarity. Spring rises along with the grasses into the greens in the burnt patches, effacing, not effacing. Listen with care. The three paths have become overgrown, but it's still possible to return. The pine and chrysanthemums of yore are still aromatic and fragrant. I want to thank everybody for coming here this morning to practice, at either just recently or at 9:30, or at some of you at 7 o'clock, and many of you at 8. We're 2 weeks off of our Sesshin, and those of you who have attended Sesshin know that you reach a place after about day three that's really quite extraordinary. And the last day of the Sesshin, you're in an altered state of consciousness, definitely a much more awakened and open and alert and actually intelligent state of awareness. And then, people come back from Sesshin, and if you've been practicing for a while, you can hold on to that condition of mind for a while, but the force of habit begins to overtake you. You don't return to your old mental state. That's not what happens. But it's definitely the case that it's difficult to maintain the kind of alertness that you achieve after, say, 8 or 9 hours of zazen. And that state of consciousness that you achieve at the end of at the end of Sesshin, as you're leaving Sesshin, my teacher, Genki Takabayashi, used to call Zenboke. Boke could be translated something that's not quite right, but you could translate it as hangover, right? It's not really a hangover. That's too negative a word. But I loved it when he would call it Zen bouquet, because bouquet, of course, sounds like bouquet, like a bouquet of flowers. So it's a multilingual pun, I guess. In Tibetan tradition, they often speak about what they call after meditation. So they talk about pre-meditation, meditation, and after meditation. And after meditation, they say, is quite important. In other words, how you move from your meditative practice back into the world is really quite important. And it's important in daily practice, right? And it's very important after Sesshin too. So sometimes people can be very accomplished in their meditative practice, but their after meditation practice or their way of dealing with meditation afterwards can be problematic and create problems for them later on. So, you know, it's very tempting on the last day of Sesshin, on the last day of meditating, if you've been meditating for 3 days or for 5 days or for 7 days, you know, to sit on the last day and think, oh my gosh, you know, 8 hours and I'm out of here. You know, your legs are tired after all that sitting there. Oh, you know, 7 hours. Actually, that's like terrible, right? I mean, that's like planting karmic seeds that are going to make it difficult for you to do this again, right? It's much better to be alert to the illusion of time, right? And it's a, you know, there's a human tendency to say, okay, you know, I've put a lot of energy into this. I'm tired and I'd like to go home. But you know, I'm going to continue to give it 100% until 6 o'clock and the session is over. And you know, that makes it easier to come back. So that's sort of like preparing the after meditation period, right? There was a person I knew who used to come to Sesshin, and then after Sesshin, he had like a list of all of the things that he couldn't do at Sesshin that he was going to do after Sesshin. So right after Sesshin, the first thing he would do is like have this giant, you know, ice cream sundae. And then later he'd have a beer and so on. And this is not good post-meditation, after-meditation practice. So, you know, we can create a boundary between ourselves and the world by imagining Sesshin as separate from the world outside, you know. So I'm out of Sesshin and now I can go back into the world, right? And that has an interesting effect, because not only does it divide them in two, but it's actually, you know, sort of like a misunderstanding of what we're doing. You know, early Buddhists thought of this practice as personal liberation. So what they did was to, you know, become monks or nuns, live in monasteries, and try to purify their minds so that they could escape from their karma, leave their karma behind, purifying body, mind, and word, and eventually waking up. That was the way they understood practice. But, you know, we in Zen don't understand practice that way. You know, we don't think of practice that way. You know, when you go to Sesshin, or when you practice on a Saturday, you may start out really in this beautiful place. You know, you get on the cushion, you start watching your breath, you're entering deep samadhi, and you begin to have this wonderful sit, right? And it's beautiful, beautiful sit. And you can feel like, oh, this is so beautiful, this is so marvelous, right? And then, you know, you start thinking about something you saw on television last night, or something in the news, or some, maybe one of your kids is having a problem and, you know, just won't get it together. And, you know, for the rest of the sitting period, you can't get back to that beautiful place. And, it's possible to imagine that this is like undeserved karma intruding on your beautiful moment of awareness. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but, you know, we can feel, if we're not careful, that there's our karma and there's everybody else's karma. And that when we do Zen practice, we're cleaning up our karma. And, you know, we do that by sort of like separating ourselves from everything else and everybody else. And that was the early Buddhist way of thinking, but it's not the Mahayana way of thinking. It's not the Zen way of thinking. So this koan is really about this misunderstanding, right? It's like, it's possible to imagine that when you come to Sesshin or when you come to sit on a Saturday, you are leaving the world behind and you're purifying your body, mind, and heart by working through your karmic obstacles. And it's possible to imagine that you're doing that by like withdrawing from the world around you. And there's some truth to that, right? You have to carve out a Saturday morning for this practice. You have to close the door. You have to tell people to be quiet. If you come, you know, we're going to start coming to the university again. It's nice to drive to the university because all of those distractions are far away and you can practice at the university without those intruding on you. But that's still a confused way of thinking about things. So this koan is getting at some of these issues. And let me go through the koan again. The head monk, whose name is Zhizhao, this is not Joshu, this is Zhizhao, asked Feiyan, who was like visiting the temple, in opening a Dharma hall as a teacher, to whom do you succeed? Now, this might make no sense at all, but in Zen tradition, a teacher will identify a person as her or his Dharma heir. So for example, Webb Roshi gave me something like, it's called Inka. It means you're the Roshi who will succeed me. And Webb received Inka from his teacher, a wonderful man named Miaochi Kanko. And he received Inka from his teacher, all the way back to Ingen in the Ming Dynasty, who came to Japan. See? And this in Zen is called a succession. So, you know, to be a teacher in the Zen tradition is to belong to a lineage or a succession, right? And, you know, often it was the case that when a teacher would give Zen authorization to teach, the Inka authorization to a person, that person would either go to another temple or start another temple, and sometimes it was called opening the mountain, or opening a temple, opening the temple. And there'd be a ceremony called opening the mountain ceremony. So at any rate, Feiyan has gone to this temple, and head monk Zhao asked Feiyan, in opening the mountain as a teacher, in establishing a new temple as a teacher, which you have done, to whom do you succeed? Who named you as his Dharma heir? See? So the head monk is asking Feiyan, you've opened a new temple. You've opened this temple. Who made you his Dharma heir, who authorized you to do this? And Phaon said, Dijong, Dijong. And Zhizhao said, you're very much turning your back on our late teacher, Zhang Jing. So what he's really saying there is, you're opening this new temple in the name of Dijong. But you know, you and I sat together under Zhang Jing. So, you know, Dijong is your Dharma father in a certain way. But what about Zhang Jing? He was also your Dharma teacher in a certain way. He was also your Dharma father in a certain way. Why aren't you opening the temple in the name of Zhang Jing? See, is this making sense? Yes? Okay, good. Okay. So look, I studied with two teachers when I got started. I studied with Takabayashi Genki Roshi, and then I studied with Kangan Glenn Webb Roshi. Okay. So, you know, actually my Dharma brother, Genjo, is the abbot at Choboji in Seattle, acknowledges a lineage that goes through Genki Roshi. And here we acknowledge a lineage that goes through Webb Roshi. Okay. So if somebody from Genjo's community came here, he might say, well, who called you Roshi? Who authorized you to do this? And I could say, well, I opened this Sangha. I opened the mountain in New Jersey, Cold Mountain. I'm in the lineage of Kangan Webb Roshi and Miaochi Panko Roshi. And then somebody could say, well, what about Genki Roshi? Sorry, I'm having a little camera issue here. Okay, there we go. You could say, well, what about Genki Roshi, see? And then, so that's the confusion here, right? You're opening this temple. You are claiming as your Dharma ancestor, Phaon, which you're forgetting about our old beloved master, Zhang Jing. And Phaon says, well, there's a reason for that. I didn't understand one teaching of Zhang Jing's. The reason I am claiming Phaon as my teacher and not Zhang Jing is there was always one thing Zhang Jing said that I just don't understand. And Zhizhao says, well, why don't you ask me? So, Phaon said, basically, what Zhang Jing used to say is, in the myriad forms, a single body is revealed. In the myriad forms, a single body is revealed. So, and to illustrate what it means, Zhizhao raises his wisp. Zen teachers in China and Japan have this ceremonial wisp made of horse tail hairs. So like a big brush, like a big brush for writing or painting. They have this loosely organized bunch of horse hairs, and it's for actually like keeping flies away. You're supposed to swish the flies away without killing them. So he holds up his whisk. And Phaon said, this is what was taught at Zhang Jing's place. But what about you? You know, you're the head monk. How do you understand this teaching? And so basically, Zhizhao just does what Phaon used to do when he was asked about the koan. He holds up the whisk. And Phaon says, yeah, that's what Zhang Jing used to do. But what about you? How do you answer the koan? And Zhizhao had nothing to say. And Phaon said, how about as an answer, in myriad forms, a single body is revealed. Is this If facing, he says, when we say in the myriad forms a single body is revealed, is this a facing the myriad forms or not a facing the myriad forms? So you're saying in myriad, when you look at the myriad forms, trees, grass, clouds, the wind, you hear the lawnmower going outside, you know, you hear somebody's playing something on the radio. In all of those myriad forms, a single reality is revealed. When you become aware of that single reality, do the myriad forms disappear or do they remain? See, so this is like really important Dharma issue, really important question. When we experience the oneness of things, does the separateness of things go away or not? See? And Zhijiao says, not effacing. They don't efface. Okay. So, and Feiyan says, rather cryptically, two. Then, this is like, I'm sure you've all seen the Price is Right. Have you seen the Price is Right? Or a quiz show where the contestant is asked a question by the host and everybody in the audience knows the answer, but the contestant doesn't know, right? And they all start shouting the answer to him, right? You know, you've seen that maybe on the radio. That happens sometimes on Wait, Don't Tell Me. Everybody knows but the contestant. So that's what happens here. All the Zen students watching this say, effacing, effacing, see? Helping head monk Zhijiao out. And then Feiyan says, in myriad forms, a single body is revealed. See, that's the drama unfolding here. So, you know, the idea in the koan is that when we think about Zen, you know, we think of lineages. This is like a convention in Zen. So my teacher formally is Web Roshi. His teacher was Miaoji Kanko, his teacher was somebody else, his teacher was somebody else. And, you know, basically Genjo Marinello Roshi would say his teacher was Takabayashi Genki Roshi, his teacher was Yamamoto Genpo Roshi, whose teacher was somebody and somebody and somebody. And it's also possible for us to think about many things this way, right? Many things this way. So you know, basically we can think about practice this way, right? So you know, Genjo has his lineage and I have my lineage, right? But actually this is really, this is like thinking when I go to Sesshin, I'm cleaning up my karma. Or when I practice Zen, I'm cleaning up my karma. You know, when that happens, we're creating a kind of false separation between ourselves and the world. And it's easy to create that false sense of separation. You know, especially when things are going badly, you know, when things are going badly, we want to protect ourselves, right? We want to protect ourselves. So, you know, it's definitely the case that, you know, sometimes I will want to sit down on the cushion and just shut the world out and sort of balance myself or center myself, right? And maybe something has gone wrong at Rutgers, you know, and it's bothering me. And, you know, it's very important to sort of like push all that away and get control of my own mind, stabilize my own awareness, get to a place of calm and begin to work through my obstacles. That's all wonderful. But, you know, actually, that can create a sense of separation that becomes a big, big problem, right? Because, you know, actually, if you think about it, it's very difficult to say who your masters in life have been, you know? It's very difficult to say what forces created you. You know, you can say, well, you know, my mother and father made me more or less what I am today, or, you know, my teacher. But, you know, if you begin to look back on it, you know, there are all these other people who had a hand in creating the person you are today. You don't even remember their names. When I was, I mentioned at the beginning of Sesshin, I had to get my COVID, or one-day COVID test. And CVS says, come to CVS, one-day COVID tests are easily available. And when you go to CVS, you realize there's no one-day COVID test. You have to get in line, or you have to put your name on a list. So I finally went on Route 22 to this clinic that was run by this wonderful Indian American doctor who was like 70 years old and was just, she just went back into practice to help people deal with COVID. And she gave me the test, and she was telling me how she helps all of these people in homeless clinics. She vaccinates all these people in homeless clinics and so on. You know, I don't even know her name. And in a year, I probably won't remember her, right? I won't remember the event. And if you think back on your life, all these things that help to make you who you are, these chance encounters or these people who aren't your parents, you don't know their names, but they've helped to create the consciousness you have today. You know, I can remember when I was in the eighth grade, I had to take Algebra 1. And I found algebra so difficult to figure out. It absolutely stymied me. The idea you'd say 2x plus 3y equals 24. It was like, well, how do I know? How could I possibly know that, right? Or 2x plus 10 is 24. It's like, how do I know? And my teacher would explain it to me, but I just didn't have the cognitive maturity to grasp this. And so for the first half of the semester, I failed Algebra 1. And, you know, my teacher, whose name I don't remember, you know, kept me after school. And she would say, Kurt, I'm not going to let you fail Algebra 1. So what she did was this huge failure for me. You know, I wanted to fail. I wanted to be thrown out of Algebra 1 so I could take, a different lower, like another math course, basically, for people who couldn't handle Algebra 1. And she wouldn't let that happen. And actually, in the second part of the semester, for reasons I don't fully understand, I started passing Algebra 1. In fact, I got straight A's the second semester. I don't know her name. You know, I can remember once my father didn't pick me up in Baltimore after school. He was supposed to pick me up, and my school was too far to walk. My father got delayed. I don't know what happened. And I waited and waited, and I began to panic, right? Because I was like, in the first grade, I think. And I began to panic. And I think I was sitting on a bench and I was just crying because I felt, you know, something terrible had happened. And this woman, I don't know her name, she walked by and she gave me money for the bus. And she said, well, where do you live? And I said, I live on Lock Raven Boulevard. And I told, she said, well, you can take this bus to Lock Raven Boulevard. She gave me the money and I got on the bus and I got home and it was okay. You know, I don't know her name. So, you know, when we imagine our lives, we sort of think of them as like a line, right? There's a line. And, you know, but there's not a line. You know, in our lives, all these different things come together. It's like every person's life is sort of like this constant meeting of all these different forces. Think of all the people in your life who have helped you in ways great and small. And all of these people have made you what you are today. All of these people, your consciousness is like a contribution. All these people are not just memories. They're part of who you are, right? And when you're sitting on the cushion and you're cleaning up your karma, you're not just cleaning up your karma, you know? You're cleaning up their karma, but you're also cleaning up everybody else's karma. Because actually, you know, we aren't really the isolated individuals that we imagine we are, you know? So if I think of my practice as about me, as about my liberation and so on, you know, I can get pretty far in my practice. But ultimately, you know, that's going to actually make it more difficult for me to wake up. Because, you know, when things arise in the world that threaten me or trouble me, you know, my reaction is going to be like to withdraw into myself or try to protect myself. And this is like a really common way of responding to trauma or to frightening things. You know, I was reading the other day that, you know, one of the ways authoritarians can become powerful is that they isolate people. They make people withdraw into themselves so that all they think about is their personal survival or their personal well-being. And this happens to all of us. You know, when we have something that's frightening or traumatic, we withdraw into ourselves and we become, you know, self-protective and self-isolated. And then everything that happens to us becomes like a risk or a danger or a threat. And, you know, this mentality can also arise in our Zen practice, right? So, you know, you go to Sesshin and you enter this beautiful state of mind on day 5. You know, it can happen to you, or day 4, where you feel that it's like on day 4 of Sesshin, you get up, you go outside, and all the blades of grass are like they've been cleaned, right? It's like the air is clean. You hear the sound of birds, and there's like no thinking obstructing your reception of all of this. And you feel totally connected. And then, you know, you go home, and when you get home, you know, basically the toilet is broken. And, you know, your son is acting up. And he's doing the usual thing to press your buttons, right? And then you get to work, and there's something going wrong at work. And, you know, around day 3 of your work week, you can look back at Sesshin and say, oh man, what happened to that consciousness? You know, that beautiful Sesshin, I wish I weren't here. I wish I were back at Sesshin. So this is really common, especially when you first start practicing Zen. You know, when people go to Sesshin, you know, the first day of a retreat, you know, you're thinking about all your problems and you're obsessing as usual, these loops, you're going through these loops. And some of them may be related to your teenage son, and some of them may be related to your teenage boss who's 60 years old, but he's a teenager, you know. And so on. And so, you know, basically that's a familiar reality. And then on day 2, it begins to go away. It's like all of that begins to go away, and you begin to get this feeling like that's not important. And then on day 3, you know, you can enter this place where all of that seems very remote, and now you're in this beautiful moment, right? And then, you know, maybe it's the end of your retreat, or maybe you have 2 more days, and you come in and out of that very beautiful state. Then you go home, and now it's the opposite. It's like nirvana and samsara. Nirvana and samsara. And that's a big problem, right? Because it's not a correct understanding of things. You know, you're thinking in the like one-dimensional way, right? You're thinking one-dimensional way, you know. So, you know, one of the things that as long as you think of Zen as your personal practice or as something you do to liberate yourself, you are going to find it difficult to liberate yourself. You know, a better attitude is something like this. If I realize that, if I come to Sesshin and I realize, yes, I'm here to help myself, but, you know, actually I realize that that I'm not just here for myself. You know, I'm here to clean up the karma of many people. My teenage son, my father, you know, my mother, you know, my people I don't even know. I'm here to clean up Mr. Trump's karma. I'm here to clean up, you know. And, you know, you start working through these obstacles, and then you get to this beautiful place, and you go back, you know, you go home from Sesshin, and, you know, instead of trying to protect yourself and feeling like all of this is a threat, you know, another way to respond to post-Sesshin reality is that I'm back to work. This is my work, cleaning up karma. So, you know, it's like, bring it on. Bring on the karma. You know, I hope I'm probably not making that much sense, but I hope I'm making some sense, right? You know, if we individualize our practice, we create the illusion of just what the Buddha says doesn't exist, an isolated individual. And if we understand that everything we do on the cushion is part of this process in which we're all involved, you know, my job is to clean up karma in this life. It doesn't matter whose karma it is. You know, it's everybody's karma. You know, and when I clean up the karma at Sesshin, I feel better. And when I come home and I have another load of karma to work through, if I just get to work and I say, okay, this is my job, I have to clean up this karma, I feel better. And not only do I feel better, but all the people around me are better, right? I'm making everybody I know better. So, you know, it's human nature to think of my life as my life. It's human nature to think of my family as my family, as my job as my job. But, you know, that's a small view, right? That's a small view. Everything is interconnected. It's like everything belongs to everybody. You know, everybody's karma is everybody's karma. So, when we're practicing, we're not just practicing for ourselves, we have to be practicing for everybody. And when we're practicing for everybody, the problems become like this wonderful way of deepening awakened mind. It's not my awakened mind, it's not your awakened mind, it's awakened mind. And so, you know, when you leave Sesshin, it's natural, if some of you have just come off your first Sesshin, there's kind of a shock, right? It's like, what happened to my beautiful nirvana? It's gone. And I'm not blaming anybody for thinking that way, because it's so common to think that way. But if you think of this as something you're doing with everybody else, even people who don't practice, right? You know, my job in this life is to clean up karma. And when I sit on the cushion, I have some sits that are like a lot of work. It's like, oh my, where did that come from? You know, in Chinese temples, monks often call this doing the work. You know, there was I've talked about this before, this wonderful a book by actually he was an amateur anthropologist. Holmes Welch. I think he was in the State Department, actually, but he did all this research on Chinese monasteries. And he said there were these monks who had been there for 70 years, and they got up, they couldn't wait to get to the cushion. And they called Zazen, they said that we can't wait to start doing the work, right? And you know, meditation is the work of cleaning karma. You know, and it's not cleaning my karma, it's cleaning everybody's karma. That's my job, right? And it's I hope it's your job. It's all of our jobs, right? You know. And if you can maintain that spirit, I think it makes a big difference in how you practice Zen. It's like Problems are threats or obstacles, as I call them too. Problems are obstacles when we think in terms of the self, right? But if we think of our job as cleaning up karma for everybody, it's like, Heather does this wonderful work, right, with the environment. And, you know, she spends days and days cleaning up the Raritan River, right, getting these teams of people together and cleaning up the Raritan River. And, you know, if you clean up a stretch of the Raritan River, you can be pretty sure in the state of New Jersey that it won't stay clean, right? It's going to get dirty again, you know. But you clean it up, and it looks better. Everybody works together. The environment has been restored for a while, and maybe in a year, you'll be back to do it again. You know, you could say the thing that's admirable, one of the things that's admirable about this, there are many things that are admirable, is that, you know, it's not Heather's river, right? She's not cleaning up her property. She's cleaning up everybody's river, right? And, you know, I'm sure that everybody involved feels better when it's done, right? And you're making the world a better place. And when you make the world a better place, you make yourself feel better too, because we are all connected, right? So, you know, Zen practice is like this too, right? It's really about helping yourself, you're helping everybody when you clean up your obstacles. And it couldn't be any other way, right? I mean, there's no such thing as individual liberation if there's no such thing as an individual, right? If everybody's interconnected. So, you know, it's hard not to come back from Sesshin and say, oh my gosh, what happened to my beautiful peace of mind? But another way of approaching it is, great, I know I can do it again. I cleaned up that stretch of the Raritan in my mind, or in our minds, right? And now I'm going to clean it up again. You know, bring on the junk, because I'm going to clean it up. This is a Mahayana view of practice, right? This is the Bodhisattva view of practice. We say in Zen and commonly in the Mahayana that the Bodhisattva makes a vow not to go into complete awakening until everybody's awakened. That's the Bodhisattva's vow. So it's like that vow, as it's normally understood, means that an individual person could go into enlightenment, complete enlightenment, and leave the world of form, and everybody else would be left. But actually, that's not actually true. That's not possible, right? That no such thing is possible. You know, we're all interconnected. There's no way not to be interconnected. And enlightenment is actually about realizing fully that interconnectedness. So, you know, when Trump became president, it was a terrible day. But on the other hand, it's just Bodhisattva work, right? If you look at it this way, everything becomes your rice. Everything becomes your food. Everything becomes your opportunity to help. You know, the day before yesterday, I had two of my classes, my first classes for the year. And I had been planning these classes. I planned the schedule, the syllabus. Everything was all done. And, you know, we had that hurricane come through. And, you know, basically, I got up and did sitting. I didn't really listen to the news. So, and then I jumped into my car and I tried to get to Rutgers. And I learned in transit, right, that you couldn't get across Route 18 because it was flooded, right? Because here in Plainfield, it looked beautiful, really, you know. And so then I looked at my phone and I saw that, you know. So I came home and I wrote all my students and said, we'll have to meet on Zoom, you know, and I tried to track. It was just chaos for a while. And, you know, my mentality was, you know, oh crap, you know, this, what a, you know, I planned this perfect class. I knew exactly where I was going to stand in the room and what I was going to say. It all fell apart, you know. And so we met on Zoom, and it was such a wonderful experience. You know, the class didn't go at all the way I planned. But, you know, it was just, you know, it was, my students were so generous and so happy to be starting the class. It was just wonderful. You know, and I realized, you know, all of these obstacles made it possible for me to experience this, like, deep love for my students who I don't even know yet, right? You know, I encountered through all of these obstacles my connection to these people, you know, and if things had gone smoothly, you know, it would just maybe just be going through the numbers, just going through the routine, right? But this was so moving, right? It's like the obstacle made me realize my connectedness, you know. They were so responsive. If I could have hugged them, I would have hugged them. And maybe they were responsive too because it was a big struggle just to get to class. So, you know, the point of this koan is it doesn't really matter who you say is your teacher, right? Web Roshi is my teacher. Genki Roshi is my teacher. Miyauchi Kenko is my teacher. You know, the lineage is like a fantasy or it's a fiction, right? All of the people, the woman who gave me that money to get on the bus in Baltimore was my teacher. You know. That woman, the doctor last week or 2 weeks ago, who that wonderful doctor, she was my teacher. Introduction. Yunmen personally saw Muzhou. So Yunmen basically studied with Muzhou, but he offered incense for a different teacher, Zhuifang. Tuzhi received the Dharma personally from Wan Qian. Yet he succeeded to the Dharma of Dayang. On the branches of the coral trees, jade flowers bloom. In the forest of sandalwood, golden fruits ripen. Tell me, how do you create? Head monk Zhizhao asked Feiyan, in opening a hall as a teacher, and starting a community as a teacher, to whom do you succeed? Feiyan said, I was appointed by Dijon. Zhizhao said, aren't you forgetting about our wonderful late teacher, Zhang Jing? Feiyan said, well, I didn't understand one saying of Zhang Jing's. Zhizhao said, well, why don't you ask me? Feiyan said, okay, in the myriad forms a single body is revealed. What is the meaning? What is the meaning? So look, there is no individual liberation. There is no individual practice. In the myriad forms, a single body is revealed. We are all the single body, and we're all waking up together. And when your practice, you're doing the hard work of sitting, is helping everybody around you, everybody. And same here, you know. Feiyan said, the thing I didn't understand was in a myriad forms a single body is revealed. What is the meaning? Zhizhao raised his whisk. Feiyan said, yes, that's what is taught at Jingzhang's place. He used to raise his whisk. But what about you, head monk? You know, what do you have to say? Zhizhao had nothing to say. Feiyan said, how about in the myriad forms a single body is revealed. Is this effacing myriad forms or not effacing myriad forms? Zhizhao said, not effacing. Feiyan said, too. The students, the audience all went, effacing, effacing. Feiyan said, in the myriad forms, a single body is revealed. Verse. Transcending thought to see Buddha. breaking down an atom to produce a scripture. The family law presently becoming who establishes a school? Who transmits the Dharma? Everybody transmits. The moon follows the boat along the river's silken clarity. Spring rises along with the grasses into the green in the burnt patches, effacing, not effacing. Listen with care. The three paths have become overgrown, but it's still possible to return. The pine and chrysanthemums of yore are still aromatic and fragrant.